Welcome to the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. Today is Sunday, November 15th, 2020. I'm Steven Jensen. Hope you all had a great week. I'm going to go through a list of topics for today's episode, then we'll jump right into it. So in this edition of the Weekender, we have results for Impact Wrestling's Turning Point. That show happened last night. We have Talk and Shop of Mania 2 results, GCW So Much Fun results, 205 Live results, NXT UK results, ROH results, UWN results, and we have a recap of the latest Being the Elite episode titled Full Gear Fallout. But before we get into all that, I always have a recommended show for you on independentwrestling.tv, and my show this week that I have chosen is ICW No Holds Barred Pit Fighter times 4 or X4 or just, you know, Pit Fighter 4, however you want to say it. The company is ICW No Holds Barred, and the show is Pit Fighter X4. This show happened on November 13th, so just this past Friday, and for those of you who don't know the concept, basically it looks like an MMA cage. It's like a circular, it's like a small circular MMA cage that it's pretty much how it sounds. It's no holds barred. It's pretty much anything goes. There are no pinfalls. It's all submission, knockout, referee stoppage, that kind of stuff. Very MMA-esque. But a lot of the matches also incorporate a lot of weapons. Like there's not all the matches, but most of the matches include, you know, weapons and that kind of stuff inside the cage, too. So, pretty crazy show. I've watched all these Pit Fighter shows up to this point, this being the fourth one. And it's something that's definitely different. Like, you know, I say this all the time, but it definitely goes both ways. Like, some people will really like this because of the deathmatch aspect, and some people will be turned off by the show because of that stuff. Like, there's definitely an audience for the deathmatch wrestling. But there's also the audience that's going to reject that. So it's kind of pick your poison. I'm kind of in the middle. Like, I don't love deathmatch wrestling usually, but it really just depends on how far it goes. And that's just my personal opinion. On this show, there was some stuff that was kind of hard for me to watch that I kind of had to watch, you know, through my fingers kind of thing. But for the most part, it was just a really, really entertaining show. And these are the matches to expect. We had Eric Ryan versus Jimmy Lloyd, Eddie Only versus Dominic Guarini, Justin Kyle versus Bruce Santee, Akira versus Nolan Edward, Reed Bentley versus Atticus Coger, Alex Ocean versus John Wade Murdoch, and Neil Diamond Cutter versus Schlack in the main event. So some things that I want to highlight here. Eddie Only versus Dominic Guarini. This is a good example of a match that didn't have any of that extra stuff. It was just a straight-up fight in a cage. Dominic Guarini, obviously, he's in his element in these kind of matches. Now, he does everything. I mean, he was even on a show last night. It's slipping my mind now. Not ICW. You just wrestled last night on IWTV also. I'll probably have that as my recommended show next week. He had a match last night with, you know, barbed wire and light tubes and the whole... Well, not barbed wire, but mainly light tubes and that kind of stuff. The point being, Greeny's he's a very versatile guy, but he's most in his element, in my opinion, when he's in these MMA-style, UWFI-style type matches, and Eddie Only is completely out of his element in these kind of matches, but it works really well with the dynamic of Greeny and Eddie Only, so I really enjoyed that, and it's wild, because, like, Greeny's become, like, a cult hero in my condo, which is just so funny to me, because Greeny's somebody I've watched live for years now. I first became aware of him through Southern Underground Pro in Nashville, Tennessee. He was a former sub Bone Storm champion, basically their heavyweight title. And I've been a fan of his for years now, and I love his tag team with Kevin Koo. I was a fan. I've got a SadConf t-shirt before they even changed their name to Violence is Forever. Like, OG fan of those guys. But my brother wasn't aware of him because my brother's not into wrestling the same way that I am. But he's over at my place a lot over the weekends. And every time I watch a show live on IWTV, my brother's like, it's funny because my brother calls him Indie Hulk Hogan. And it's not because of the physique or because of the look or the character or anything like that. My brother calls him that because he's like the most recognizable guy to him on IWTV. Because every time my brother's over, no matter what the company is, Greeny is wrestling on that show that weekend. Like, he's always on the show, which is awesome. I mean, he's putting in so much work. And the stuff he's got going with MLW coming up, I mean, I'm really looking forward to the future for Dominic Guarini. And I really love Eddie Only. He has changed significantly since the first time I saw him. I saw him for first when he was more so of a tag team guy with Derek Direction, a team called The Production. And Eddie only now, of course, being associated with 440, the stable with Ricochet and Page and Gregory Iron and Atticus Coger and those guys. Eddie only has just been a great heel. He's just so grimy and dirty. It's perfect for what he needs to be. So I really liked Only and Guarini. They were both, once again, Eddie only out of his element, Guarini totally in his element, but it worked really well. Justin Kyle versus Bruce Santee. I saw people online basically saying this was like a very, it was very similar to like Kimbo Slice versus Dada 3000 or Dada 5000. If those of you are familiar with the Bellator fight, and we mean that kind of stylistically. It was two huge guys who just slugged it out, and it's a lot of fun. I love that match. My match of the night was Akira versus Nolan Edward. I tweeted right after the match that something to the effect of, I understand that pro wrestling is about making money, like I get that, but you don't have the kind of match that Akira and Nolan Edward had if you're not doing it for the love of the game, because those guys went out and did some crazy stuff. It was hard hitting. There was a little bit of everything, and yeah, I mean, I really can't say enough. Like, if there's only one thing you watch on this entire show, I would highly recommend watching Akira versus Nolan Edward. Once again, just disclaimer for those listening, there's some pretty graphic moments in this match, but it also, I've also become very numb to a lot of it, to be honest. Like, so it's just one of those things where I'm getting more and more used to seeing certain stuff in matches, so it's not bothering me quite as much, like on like the deathmatch side. But the reason I give you these disclaimers is because I don't know like the full scope of everyone listening to this show, and I would never want to like recommend something that could potentially like, like traumatize you if you're not ready to see it. Now, once again, if you're into the deathmatch wrestling, this stuff's gonna be right up your alley. Like, just really, really great stuff. But once again, Akira vs. Nolan Edward, it was a little bit of everything, and two guys that I think are just awesome. Nolan Edward, I think he technically started wrestling in 2019, but for my money, he's the 2020 Rookie of the Year. Like, especially because this year's been so weird and people didn't get to wrestle as often as they would have, without a pandemic and stuff. Nolan Edward, I really think he's really kind of the guy to watch right now as far as the up and comers who are really starting to blow up. Nolan Edward is on the top of that list for me, and Akira is right there too. Like, Akira is awesome. And these two guys, it's like a you get a fight forever vibe between these two guys. You know that they're gonna keep wrestling each other year after year after year, and have a long history and probably of teaming and fighting against each other, and I'm a big fan of both. Speaking of guys that I'm a fan of, Atticus Coger took on Reed Bentley on the show. I like Atticus a lot. Now, once again, there's a lot of stuff that he does during his matches that you just have to be ready for, because just for instance, a lot of his matches he likes to do the skewers, the wooden meat skewers. For those of you who may not know, it happens a lot in deathmatch wrestling currently, where people will take literal wooden meat skewers and pop them into people's foreheads, and it looks like you look like a demented unicorn, like walking around with these things sticking out of your head, and it's gruesome, and it's something I would never do myself ever. But Atticus likes those a lot. He likes the crazy stuff. He likes the glass and the blood. And but the thing with Atticus, and I've been saying this for a minute now, I really think, because he's such a great heel, like he's such a grimy heel, but I think he's going to be an even bigger baby face than a heel. I know that might sound strange, but there's definitely a baby face in there, because he's a guy, he's sympathetic from the point of view where you're like, you see the stuff that he does and you hear the things that he says, but then you're kind of like, well, this guy's only, he's doing it because like he has nothing else. And he, you know what I mean? And like, I honestly think that eventually he'll be the one to take the belt off Ricochet and Page, the GCW title. So that could be really interesting, and that could be a hell of a run for Coger potentially. Now, I could be totally wrong on that, but I think that'd be a cool direction to go. And like I said, I'm a very big fan of Atticus. Like, he doesn't, none of these guys, by the way, need to be doing a lot of the deathmatch stuff they're doing. I think they do it because they like it, and that's kind of their art form. And there's definitely a market for it. And just stress that over and over again. There's definitely a market for it. But it's a market that doesn't lead. I don't know how to say this. There's a market for it, but there's a much, 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 much larger market outside of it. So if you can make a name for yourself on that scene, that's awesome. But if you're not going to be able to do that kind of stuff on national TV, I guess that's probably the best way of putting it. So like, if there are any aspirations of a guy like Atticus Coger, to go on to be a major star in like AEW or anywhere else, that you're just not going to see a lot of that stuff. And I think Atticus has the skills and the character and the talent and all that to transcend beyond just, kind of that scene. I think that he has a lot of mainstream potential, is I guess what I'm saying. Now, that might be something he doesn't even want to hear, or that his fans don't even want to hear. They're like, oh, fuck that, fuck going mainstream. But it's like, I also don't know how long you want to be. I don't think most, I'm just, this is just a thought, and it's just my opinion. But I don't think most wrestlers want to be doing this stuff their entire careers. Now, for now, it's awesome. Like, he's building a hell of a fan base. He's got a lot of potential. And this goes for not just Atticus. This goes for a lot of guys that I'm talking about right now. But it's one of those things where it's like 5, 10 years down the line, do you still want to be the guy kind of like just getting by with death matches, or do you want to be a guy who's financially set for his life and doesn't have to do all that and put his body through all that and still be a massive star in professional wrestling? You know what I mean? So that all being said, huge fan of Atticus. And I just see so much potential in him. And then, a couple others that I'll highlight. Neil Diamond Cutter, it's the Honey Badger. He's very unique. I've seen him wrestle a handful of times now, and the guy's just absolutely crazy. And Schlack, who wrestled in the main event, also wrestled. He wrestled Ming last night on that same show that Greeny was on. I just can't think of the name of it. They had the link chain ropes and all that stuff, chain link ropes, I should say. But Schlack is just, he's one of those guys that, like, I know wrestling is like a quote unquote work and all that, but like, I might be like legitimately afraid to just meet Schlack. Just even to go up and shake the guy's hand would intimidate the hell out of me. He's just nuts. So yeah, a lot of good stuff on this show. I highly recommend checking it out. And I super highly recommend checking out Akira vs. Nolan Edward. Like I mentioned, if there's nothing else on this show that interests you, I would highly recommend checking out Akira vs. Nolan Edward. It honestly was one of my favorite matches of 2020. It really was. And that includes all companies. So, once again, the recommended show this week for me on IWTV is ICW No Holds Barred Pit Fighter X4. It's available right now. Check it out. Moving on, we have Impact Wrestling's Turning Point. This show was free for anybody who is on Impact Plus, which is just like their website. So that's just awesome that they basically do one free show like this a month just on their website, essentially. And it's something which is interesting because if you go to like fight.tv and you wanted to watch the same show, it would have cost you $10, which I'm glad I know I could just watch it for free. But yeah, anyways, that all being said, I thought this was a really good show. It started off with Eddie Edwards defeating Daivari, got the one with a Boston Knee Party after just a solid match. Daivari looks just to be in the best shape of his life. I've been saying that ever since his return at, I think it was Slammiversary. And I mean, he looks like he's going, he's just, I mean, I shouldn't say like he's ready for another run with any particular company. He's clearly on a run right now with Impact, but he looks like he could literally go anywhere and be ready to go right now. I mean, and Eddie Edwards, he's Impact Wrestling's boy. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a fan of his. I think he's super solid. He's very, very good at what he does. He's just going to be stuck for a minute in kind of a gatekeeper role, I think. I don't think that he's the right guy to be the Impact Wrestling World Champion right now. I thought he was the wrong guy to win the title at Slammiversary. Obviously, he's not the champion currently, but he's always kind of going to be lingering around that scene towards the top of the show, which he definitely deserves. Like, definitely deserves that. But let me put it this way. There are people on Impact's roster that I hope start beating Eddie Edwards and start getting bigger pushes for themselves, because I just see that kind of more as Eddie's role right now, just to be totally honest. Like, I think he's better served right now to put over the next generation of stars for Impact. Just my personal opinion. Now, that being said, I think Eddie Edwards defeating Daivari is the right call because I don't think Daivari is like the next wave of their stars. But there are people like, for instance, another guy I'll talk about here because he had a match on the show, like Willie Mack. I'd love to see like Willie Mack beat Eddie Edwards after like a good feud or something like that and elevate. You know what I mean? Something like that. After that, we have Rosemary and Ty Valkyrie defeating Jordynne Grace and Tennille Dashwood. The finish came when Rosemary locked in the upside down and hit a butterfly cradle drop for the 1-2-3. My only problem with this is, well, for one, I think just the wrong team won in general. And Jordynne Grace is taking too many losses. She took the pinfall on this one. I don't like that. I think that Jordynne Grace, now granted, for those of you who listen to the show often, you know that I definitely have my favorites or the people that I really want to see pushed. I really, really don't understand why Jordynne Grace isn't still like at just the top of the knockouts division. She doesn't have to be the perennial champion, but I don't think she should be taking the pinfall in tag team matches. Now, she's gonna be a part of the upcoming women's knockouts tag team tournament for the new titles that they're bringing back. And her partner is listed as TBA, so to be announced. Don't know who that's gonna be. But I've got to assume that Jordynne Grace and whoever her partner is are probably going to win the entire thing, or at the very least make it to the finals, and maybe one of the two turns on the other, and that starts a major story or something. I don't know. But they need to keep Jordynne spotlighted amongst the knockouts. And beyond that, like, I mean, she was a part of the X Division Championship match recently, and she can wrestle the men. Like, Impact Wrestling is obviously becoming more and more known as a place where you can see really good intergender wrestling. And that was obviously on prime example being Tessa Blanchard being the Impact Wrestling World Champion as a female. And Jordynne Grace is just as good as in my opinion, of having intergender matches as Tessa. Like, they're both very similar to me as far as like skill, like a level of skill. They're very different in like presentation and the moves that they do. But I think they're both very, very good at intergender wrestling. And that's saying a lot from me because I'm really not a huge fan of intergender wrestling, but there's certain people like Tessa and Jordynne that do it very well. And my point being, there's just so much you can do with Jordynne, whether it's against guys, girls, trans, anything in between. You know what I mean? Like, regardless of gender, I'll just put it that way. Regardless of any kind of gender, Jordynne Grace could wrestle anybody. And I just don't like seeing her lose tag team matches, especially, you know, I just think this was the wrong move. And when I say especially, because it's like she's with Tennille Dashwood also, who they're pushing and has a big name value. And the match itself was solid, but the decision of who won this one, I just think was the wrong call, in my opinion. After that, we had Brian Myers defeating Swoggle. He hit the Midnight Strike finish for the 1-2-3. This was fun for what it was. Swoggle got a little offense in. The whole kind of idea behind this match is that they're, you know, best friends in real life, which is the truth. If anyone watches the Major Wrestling Figure Podcast YouTube channel, you see Brian Myers and Swoggle together all the time. They really are real life best friends. And it was like Swoggle didn't want to have to fight Myers, but Myers was just like telling Swoggle just to lay down for him. And Swoggle wanted to prove that he belongs and that he is a professional wrestler, not just like a sideshow kind of thing. And yeah, I thought this was really good. And Brian Myers attacked Swoggle after the match, and Crazy Steve made the save. So looks like they're going to continue the story. And it makes sense to put Swoggle and Crazy Steve together because, like I said, although Swoggle isn't like a sideshow because he can wrestle, Crazy Steve is kind of the perfect kind of guy to stick up for him because Steve is another guy who could be perceived as kind of a sideshow kind of act, right? So I think this all makes sense. After that, we had James Storm and Chris Sabin defeating Team Triple XL. Thought this was really good. It's interesting seeing Storm and Sabin teaming together, but it makes sense considering Alex Shelley's injured at the moment, so no problem there. I'm just happy to see James Storm as a part of the show, and I was always good to see Chris Sabin too. Triple XL is a is a darn good tag team for what they are, to be honest. And I really like AC Romero in particular. But yeah, James Storm and Chris Sabin get the win. The finish came when James Storm hit Larry with a super kick for the 1-2-3, the last call, whatever you want to call it. After that, we had Rohit Raju make an open challenge for his X Division Championship. And Cousin Jake, a.k.a. Jake Something, answered the challenge. Good match with Rohit Raju retaining the belt over Cousin Jake after hitting a sliding knee for the 1-2-3. I love seeing this. I mentioned this on Twitter as well last night, but I discovered both of these guys through Glory Pro Wrestling, a company that you can find a lot of their stuff on independentwrestling.tv. And years ago, I used to drive from Nashville to the St. Louis area fairly often, like once a month or whatever it was, to go see Glory Pro. I went probably 5 times or so. And some of the young talent that I had never seen before were Cousin Jake and Rohit Raju, known as Jake Something and Hakeem Zayn. And it's just awesome seeing these guys wrestle each other in Impact Wrestling on you know, just a larger stage. And huge shout out to Glory Pro Wrestling. I know that they're not the only ones worth shouting out. Like, Jake Something is currently the Black Label Pro Heavyweight Champion, and Hakeem Zayn and himself are both doing great stuff in AEW. But, I mean, there's plenty of companies that deserve credit for helping the careers of Jake Something and Rohit Raju. But Glory Pro is where I saw them both first. And I kind of consider both guys Glory Pro guys. And it was really cool to see that on last night's Impact. After that, we had Willie Mack defeating Moose by disqualification. The TNA World title was on the line, but of course Moose retains the belt because there was a disqualification. So of course, you know, the belt doesn't change. But basically, Moose just beat down Willie Mack until the referee stopped it. So it looked like it was going to be a stoppage victory for Moose, and then Moose just kept attacking him after the match, and the referee reversed the decision. So technically, I mean, so Moose won the match basically by like ground and pound. Like, he hit a spear and then just ground and pounded the hell out of him. But that's a thing in pro wrestling, and that's a thing in fighting too. Like, you can get disqualified after a fight. It's totally possible. That rarely ever happens, but that is a real thing. And I like seeing it implemented here, mainly. So I'll tell you what I like and what I don't like here. What I like is that they're going to continue to do Willie Mack versus Moose, it looks like. And Willie Mack is someone who just totally deserves the push. I talk about him probably more than anyone else when I talk about Impact Wrestling on this show, as a guy who I just think they should just be doing so much more with, especially with Rich Swann being the heavyweight champion and the history that Swann and Willie Mack have. I feel like Willie Mack is a shoe-in for a world title shot at some point. But yeah, I like that Mack and Moose are going to keep going, because Moose has done a good job lately, especially with his feud with EC3, of elevating that TNA title again to meaning something. But what I kind of don't like about it is Moose pretty definitively beat the hell out of Willie Mack at the end of that match. And it's like, you know, I guess it's all a story and all that stuff, but I would have liked to see maybe a little less of a definitive beatdown before the DQ, because it just, if this was real, which I know it isn't, but if this was real, I'd look at that and be like, I don't even want to see a rematch. Like, Moose just beat the shit out of him, you know? But it's wrestling, you know? And hopefully what's going to happen is this is going to lead to a bigger match, and maybe Willie Mack will even get the title. I don't know. But I am interested, and I'm glad that Willie Mack is doing something. And also, I got to give a shout out to Moose, who I honestly think is doing the best work of his whole career right now. I really do. So that was really good stuff for what it was, to be honest. Speaking of more good stuff, we have new Impact Tag Team Champions, the Good Brothers, who had a big weekend. I'll be talking about them a little bit more in the next show that I'm going to be recapping. But yeah, the Good Brothers, Gallows and Anderson, defeat the North, Ethan Page and Josh Alexander, to become the new Impact World Tag Team Champions. Basically, the finish came when Ethan got hit with the Magic Killer for the 3 count. And this is basically what... So after Bound for Glory, myself and Sean Ross Sapp on the Fightful YouTube channel did a review of the show right after. And one of the things that I mentioned was I was... surprised that the North had won the titles back so soon, because they had the belts for over a year, lost them to Motor City Machine Guns at, I believe it was Slammiversary, and then wound up winning them back at Bound for Glory. And it was like, just surprising, like, why would you take the belts off them? But then it comes, you know, then you find out Al Shelley's hurt and all that stuff. And I even said during the podcast, I was like, I bet that the North are going to drop the belts to the Good Brothers, especially because Carl Anderson took the pinfall in the match where the North won the titles back. It was a multi-team match. So I kind of saw this coming, but like, that's not a bad thing. Like, I think everyone assumed that the Good Brothers were getting these belts at some point before the end of the year, and this is it, and we'll see where it goes. You know, I will say I'm enjoying the Good Brothers more now than I was before, especially when they were in the WWE, for sure. But you know, it's looking more and more kind of like they're, you know, kind of they did back in New Japan when they, you know, before they signed with the WWE and all that. And I'm interested to see where all this goes, because the Good Brothers, they're popular, they got huge name value, they're great for, you know, they have their following, right? And they're very good in the ring, they're hilarious characters. Like, I'll be talking more about that once again. Talking Chopper Mania 2 is the next thing I'm reviewing. But yeah, the North, though, for my money, are still the best tag team in the world. It's just going to get really interesting now, because Ethan Page's contract is going to be up soon, and I think Josh Alexander still has another year or so with Impact, so we'll see where all this goes. But you know, huge shout out to the Good Brothers for getting this win and becoming the new tag team champions. After that, Deonna Purrazzo defeated Su Yung to become the new and now two-time Knockouts champion. This was a pretty darn good match. There was some things that I didn't really like about it, though. I'll just knock that out right now. There was a point in the match where Deonna had her in her, it's like a double Fujiwara armbar, almost like a Rings of Saturn variation, kind of. She had that on Su Yung with Sue's head in a chair, and she passed out completely, and for some reason just let go of the hold, and the referee checked to see if she was knocked out. It's hard to explain, but it was one of these things that was, it was strange. Like, I don't know why you wouldn't just keep someone in the submission hold until they pass out versus putting them in a submission hold, then just letting it go and walking away and giving her time to recover. I didn't understand that at all. And then Su Yung made the really, I mean, I don't even know how to put that. I mean, it was like she just completely no-sold everything that had happened up to that point. Threw up a mandible claw, looked like she was going to get the win. I mean, it was like, wait a second. She went from being completely knocked out to looking like this match is just now starting. I didn't like that. But ultimately, Deonna does get the win. She hits her finish called the Cosa Nostra for the 1-2-3. It's like a... It was like, geez, what was it? How could I wish I could rewatch the move right now. When I watched it last night, I remember it looking kind of like a, I don't know if it was like a J driller. It was like a pile driver type variation move. And Purrazzo getting the win, I mean, this makes sense. Like, I'm totally fine with her being the champion. I don't think she should have ever lost the belt to Su Yung to begin with. That whole situation was crazy because it was supposed to be Deonna Purrazzo versus Kylie Rae, and Kylie Rae was not a part of the show for, you know, whatever reason, and now it looks like she's just not wrestling at all, Kylie Rae, that is, and they put the belt on Su Yung. It's just like, hey, let's throw a curveball, and Deonna got it right back, so that's the right call in my opinion. So good to see Deonna Purrazzo with the Knockouts belt. And in the main event, Rich Swann retained the Impact World Championship. He defeated defeated Sami Callihan with, so the finish was basically, he hit the closest, I mean, basically spinning wheel kicks, but like for pro wrestling, you probably more familiar with like the Black Mass, like Aleister Black's move, you know, just a spinning kick to the head. Rich Swann hit like three or so of those in a row. Brought Sami Callihan to his knees, and then Sami hit just like a nice thrust kick to the side of the head to get the win. And I thought this match was really good. And Rich Swann is champion rules. Like, I'm all for it. I'm 100% for Rich Swann being the champion. This was a good match. There was a long-term story here that went back years with like the OVE story and all that, and they're linked to each other being friends back in the day. So really, really great stuff. And, you know, just, yeah, Rich Swann as the champion is the right move, in my opinion. One thing I forgot to mention is also after the Deaners match, where they lost, well, not the Deaners match, but after Cousin Jake lost to Rohit Raju, after the match, Eric Young came out and attacked the Deaners, and along with him in the attack was Joe Doering, which is something I did not expect to see at all. Like, that came completely out of left field. For those of you who don't know, Joe Doering was the champion in All Japan Pro Wrestling. Like, he's one of the most under-talked about, underrated, underappreciated guys in wrestling over the past, like, 10 years or so, to be honest. Like, he's a guy that I feel was on hardly anyone's radar. And he's done work with, like, Impact Wrestling in the past, but it was, like, 15 years ago. Like, it was so random to see him, but it's a perfect pairing, putting him with Eric Young. Like, it gives Eric Young this big bodyguard-type guy who's going to help beat up people for him and help protect him, I'm sure. And Eric Young's just completely crazy, so he's going to be in Joe Doering's head. So this was really good stuff. I didn't want to forget to mention that because I didn't have it in my notes for whatever reason, but yeah, I think that that's it's a great pairing that makes a lot of sense, and it got a lot of buzz. Like, there was a lot of people online. It was like half the people were like, "Who the hell is Joe Doering?" And the other half were like, "Holy shit, it's Joe Doering!" So yeah, really good stuff there. Moving on to a show that is either going to be really good or really, really, really awful, depending on how you look at it. And that show is Talkin' Shop of Mania 2. So I'm going to give you basically a kind of a recap of the things that happened and the results, but, like, me saying these things isn't going to do any of it justice. And it's going to be very confusing, so I'm just going to kind of go through it and leave it up to y'all to either check this show out or don't, but it's a show that I would highly recommend checking it out. I was thoroughly entertained throughout this show. Show's kicked off with Chris Jericho as Clint Bobski, who you might remember from, what was it called? Southpaw Regional Wrestling that they did with the WWE years back. So Jericho was actually a part of the show as Clint Bobski, which I really didn't expect to see. We had a CGI Luke Gallows, who's on commentary with Anderson and Romero. First match we had was Brian Myers and Swoggle defeating Rory Fox in a rim job. Can't even say this stuff without laughing. And there you go, that just kind of proves my point. In Impact Wrestling, Swoggle and Myers are wrestling each other, but they're obviously friends and together in this match. We had segments where Gregory Helms is investigating a murder throughout the show. Freight Train wrestled Frankie Coverdale. Got the win there. Just the fact that Freight Train is even wrestling is just, I don't even know what to say about that, but yeah, just is what it is. We had a match where Tommy Dreamer defeated Rhino, Just Incredible. It's hard to even explain what I'm trying to talk about. Like, we had Paul Lee, who basically does a Ric Flair cosplay. He wrestled George North, and Paul Lee came out with, like, this Evolution ripoff stable. I can't even remember what they called it. But it was like this Evolution ripoff where Mike Knox was, like, cosplaying Batista, and Nathan Orton was, like, Randy Orton, and Mark Jindrak was, like, Triple H. And it's so funny because Mark Jindrak being Triple H to begin with is just hilarious in itself. Because everyone, well, I shouldn't say everyone, but people who know that, you know, Jindrak, basically his entire career not panning out in the WWE the way it was planned to is because Triple H, like, kiboshed his push, basically. And was like, Mark Jindrak was supposed to be in Evolution, and Triple H was not a fan of his and basically got him kicked out of the group before it ever got started. George North wound up getting the win over Paul Lee. It was really funny for what it was, though. There were so many times where, like, they'd go for a move and, like, Paul Lee would like move so early, and George North would like see him move and then still go for the move anyways and miss, and like, yeah, just once again, I can't do this show justice at all with what I'm with just reading the results out. We had a lucha death match where so I can't even, there were so many people in this. The highlight to me though was, so basically, Alex Kozlov at one point, like they're picking teams. It's Team Chico, El Luchador, and Team Chavo Guerrero. And while they're picking their teams, and this thing could only be like kind of likened to in the movie Anchorman when all the the news people are fighting each other, and it's just like this crazy brawl that you just so over the top, right? Kozlov had a gun with him. And Chavo was like, no, man, you're holding a gun. What are you doing a gun for? And it's like, well, it's a death match. You know, like, during this match, we saw, like, Taya Valkyrie pull someone's spine out of their back, like Mortal Kombat. And JTG was in this. And, we had a zombie that was, like, ECW zombie, if I can fucking say that. This is just one. Either watch it or don't, but I cannot do it justice. We see Air Paris get put through a barbershop window by what looks like a fake Marty Jannetty, which is pretty funny because Air Paris is basically the Marty Jannetty of his tag team with AJ Styles, and obviously AJ Styles has become this massive star, one of the best of all time. Air Paris seems like a good dude. I actually have some mutual friends with him that say a lot of good things about him. He seems like a great guy, but this whole segment was pretty funny. The main event was a ball for a ball, you know, instead of like an eye for an eye. It was basically the winner was whoever could rip their opponent's nutsack off first. And this was hilarious. Like this match, I'm not exaggerating when I say this. Obviously, it's a very different thing, and I'm not exaggerating. People who love WWE are gonna hate hearing me say this. I was more entertained by a ball for a ball match than anything I've watched on Raw this entire year. And this thing was completely ridiculous. I'm not even going to attempt to talk about this match. There were so many surprises. I'm just going to recommend that y'all watch it. I don't even want to ruin it for y'all. Like, just if you haven't watched it, watch it. You're either going to think it's the funniest thing you've ever seen or just the worst piece of garbage you've ever watched. But the match ended in a no contest. I'll leave you with that spoiler. It ends in a no contest, but there is so many appearances and so much funny stuff. I mean, bravo. Bravo for those that put on Talking Shop of Mania 2, because as completely ridiculous as the show was, I was legitimately entertained. And at the end of the day, that was the point. So I got to give it a thumbs up. I enjoyed myself, especially the main event. I thought the main event was really, really well done. Moving on, we have GCW's So Much Fun. Show started off, well, I'm just going to read the results down and maybe highlight some stuff. So we have Jordan Oliver defeating Juicy. There was a scramble match where AJ Gray defeated Ace Austin, Holodead, Arrow Boy, Joe Keys, and Levi Everett. Atticus Cogre defeated Cole Radrick. Blake Christian defeated Leo Rush. Iron Beast, the team of KTB and Shane Mercer, defeated the Ugly Ducklings, the team of Rob Killjoy and Lance Lude. Chris Dickinson defeated Eric Ryan. Tony Deppen defeated Alex Zane. And in the main event, Ricky Shane Page retained the GCW World title by defeating Mance Warner. I thought the show was really good from top to bottom. I'd highly recommend this one. Some stuff that I'd point out, you know, Atticus Cogre and Cole Radrick, two guys that, once again, I've already talked a lot about Atticus. Cole, I talk about him on the show a lot, and he is just wrestling everywhere right now and getting better and better and better. And he's doing some crazy stuff, too. I mean, there's some really crazy stuff in this match with him and Atticus. So, you know, highly recommended there. Like both guys a lot. Speaking of two guys that I like a lot, Blake Christian and Leo Rush. This match ruled. These are two of the best, quote-unquote, kind of high-flying guys that you could see right now. Like, Blake Christian is doing work in New Japan currently. And I know a little bit more about kind of what his future is going to look like, but I won't say anything about that at the moment. Leo Rush, I've been saying for a while, he's one of the best in-ring workers in the entire world, and he's fantastic on the microphone. So The more that I can see Lio Rush, the better. Iron Beast and the Ugly Ducklings, two tag teams that I really like. I mean, Iron Beast is just a lot of fun to watch because they are two huge guys that can do everything. I'm particularly impressed by Shane Mercer. Ugly Ducklings, awesome tag team. I've seen them live in the Southeast a handful of times, and I love their presentation and their attitudes. I love their merch. Their merch table is like top-notch, top-notch every time I've seen them wrestle live. Chris Dickinson being a part of the show, I highlight him all the time. I'll basically just say again what I always say about him. He's got to be like one phone call away from being either signed to AEW or NXT or maybe doing something in Impact. I don't know, but Dickinson is right there, ready to be a mainstream talent, and he's been in that spot for a while now. And I feel like I say this every week, but eventually, one of these weeks, I'll get here on the Weekender show, and the big news will be that Chris Dickinson signed with a major company, and I'll be very happy when that happens. Tony Deppen and Alex Zane, this ruled. Alex Zane, this was his last independent wrestling match. The reports is that he's been signed to the WWE. I'll go ahead and say this now that the word is out. I heard about a month or so ago that Alex Zane had signed to the WWE, and I was sworn to secrecy on not saying anything about it. There was him, and there was about five others that all got signed to large promotions right around the same time. Alex Zane's name is out now. I won't mention any of the others because, once again, it's one of these things where, like, I don't want to burn my bridges with my sources, and I have really close connections to certain people in independent wrestling that give me a lot of information. And I hate being that kind of guy who's like, I know something you don't know, because that's not what I'm trying to say here. The point is that sometimes there's certain things that we see happening on wrestling shows that we don't understand at the time. But sometimes when you know the full story and kind of know where things are heading, you're like, okay, this makes a lot of sense, actually. And Alex Zane, and the others that I had heard about, recently signing with large companies from the indies and stuff, I really, to me, it's one of those things where, like, I'd rather have the trust of the talent. This is just me personally. I'd rather have the trust of the talent than be the one breaking the news. That's just me completely personally, because I consider, like, when I found out about Alex Zane signing with the WWE, I was told I was one of five people who knew. I'll just put it that way. You know what I mean? So I just don't want to break that kind of trust with my sources. I'll just put it like that. And I'm very happy to see Alex Zane getting the recognition he's about to get, because from what I'm gathering, and we're going to talk about 205 Live here in a second, I feel like they're really going to be bulking up 205 Live more and more, and they're going to be using that more as like how Evolve was a feeder to NXT. Now that NXT is kind of more mainstream and Evolve doesn't exist anymore, that's kind of the vibes that I'm getting. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if we saw Alex Zane on 205 Live soon. They could use him anywhere. He's going to be a great character, and he's crazy. Like, there, I always compare the three guys that I always compare are Alex Zane, Ben Carter, and Blake Christian. Blake Christian and Ben Carter, I think, are a bit more polished as far as just like just traditional, like, I shouldn't say traditional, but like high flying guys that are always going to get over just because they can just have awesome matches. Alex Zane is the same kind of way, except he has that next kind of level of kind of insanity. Like, I've watched him literally dive over the top rope headfirst into a trash can onto the floor before, right in front of me. This guy is completely insane. So I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing for his future, but I'll put it this way. I am a big Alex Zane fan. I'm glad I was able to keep my mouth shut about him signing for so long, and I'm very happy to see what happens in his future. And Tony Deppen, I'll just put it this way. I think there's a lot of big things coming for Tony Deppen soon. Absolutely keep your eyes on him. And main event, I mean, Ricky Shane Page, who I think is just a fantastic champion. He was a guy it took me a while to come around on, but RSP, I'm very, very impressed by. And Mance Warner, in my opinion, I've said it once, I've said it a thousand times, he is the top, in my opinion. He is the next one. Like, it is baffling to me, actually, that he hasn't already been signed by, and he might have been, to be honest. He's a guy that I really don't know. I know for sure he has offers, but I don't know if he has signed or where he's planning on signing. but Mance Warner is going to be a massive star. Similar to Atticus Coker, where I was talking about, like, well, you know, you're not going to be putting skewers into people's heads and stuff, you know, your whole career. And like Mance Warner, I think that he's enough of a character that he can ditch all the deathmatch stuff and just get over without any of it right now. Now, do I think that's what he wants to do? I don't know. Like, for all I know, he'll turn down all the offers and just keep doing deathmatch wrestling and doing whatever he does. But he isn't so much like he's known for deathmatch wrestling, but he's also just as known as just like a top character on the indies who has good matches and good stories, you know? So yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens in Mance's future. And RSP, in my opinion, he's the right guy to be the GCW World Champion right now. And I've mentioned earlier on the show, I would love to see Atticus Coker be the one to take that belt from him eventually. So those were the results for GCW. Moving on, we got 205 Live. Now, this was a one-match show, but it was a really, really good match. And it was a multi-person match to determine the next challenger for Santos Escobar's Cruiserweight Championship. The participants we had were Tony Nese, Ari Daivari, Ashante the Adonis, Kurt Stallion, and August Gray. This was a great match. Lasted the entirety of the show. The finish came when Kurt Stallion hit a Spanish fly off the top rope onto Tony Nese for the 1-2-3. And I love this. Like, I absolutely love that Kurt Stallion's getting a push. He's a guy I've been a fan of for a long time. He was a guy, once again, y'all will know this, those of you who listen to The Weekender, I've been doing the show for almost 2 years. It'll be 2 years in a couple weeks. And Kurt Stallion, somebody I always said this whole time, was like how I'm talking about Mance Warner right now being like the next guy. Kurt Stallion was that next guy for a while. And to see him getting the recognition he deserves, and to see him getting this push, and I don't know if he's going to beat Escobar for the title, but the fact that he's even in the mix, and I mean, this is all a really good look for Kurt Stallion. And he even said, I don't know if it was after the match or if it was on Twitter, I remember him saying something to August Gray to the effect of, if and when I win the title, I'm going to give you your fair shot at the championship because they are friends. And just, this was really good. A really good match. And I love seeing Kurt Stallion get that win. Like, and everyone involved in this match is just very talented. Like, Daivari and Nese are kind of in the spot they're going to be in, I think. They're kind of at kind of a gatekeeper level at the moment. But it's working fantastically because it's helping elevate guys like Ashante the Adonis, August Gray, and especially Kurt Stallion. And if some of these guys that I'm hearing are heading to the WWE soon, there's going to be so much talent on 205 Live, if that's where these people wind up landing, that it's about to become an even better show. Like, it's a show that I've said week after week for like 2 years. It's a show that has very little consequence. If you miss an episode, you're not really missing out on much in the grand scheme of things. But I'm starting to kind of, that's kind of shifting right now. Because in my opinion, I think people should be watching and seeing what Kurt Stallion's doing and what Santos Escobar is doing. And, even like Everrise and the Bollywood Boys got involved in this match and stuff. I mean, there's a lot of really good talent, and like I keep saying, if some of these names that I'm hearing are heading there and they're going to wind up in 205 Live, it is shifting from a kind of a no consequence if you miss a type show to a must watch show. I'm going to be dead honest, y'all. And there's some people who hear this and like they're just like going to think I'm just the biggest WWE hater and blah blah blah, and that isn't the case. I'm just want to see whoever is putting on good wrestling. And I have been consistently more entertained by 205 Live than Raw for a while now. Just being totally honest. It's a shorter show with great action and talent that I'm getting behind, you know? So I'd recommend it. You know, if you haven't watched 205 Live in a while, at the very least I'd recommend checking this show out because then it'll get you more familiar with maybe some people you would not been paying attention to. Maybe get you familiar with someone like Kurt Stallion for the first time heading into his match against Santos Escobar. And I don't know when they're going to have their match. I don't know if that's like a next week kind of thing or if they're going to. But I would love to see Kurt Stallion and Santos Escobar on NXT. Like, have them wrestling each other, you know, on a bigger show with more eyes. think that'd be a right, you know, I think that'd be a good call. But huge shout out to Kurt Stallion. I love seeing that. Moving on, we have NXT UK results from this week. Show started off with The Hunt defeating Amir Jordan and Kenny Williams. Got the win with her finisher, the Ambush, for the 1-2-3. Up next, Rampage Brown defeated Jack Starks. Just a complete squash. Hit a Samoan drop, sit out powerbomb for the win. You can tell that they're going to be heavily pushing Rampage Brown in the foreseeable future. So we'll see where all that heads. But yeah, just a total squash there. After that, Xia Brookside defeated Nina Samuels. Got the win with an inside cradle. And in the main event, in the semifinals of the UK Heritage Cup tournament, we had Trent Seven defeating Dave Mastiff. Got the finish with his Birminghammer, which I think is a great play on words for a move, by the way, and a great move in itself. I think the Birminghammer, aka the Birminghammer, is a just a fantastic pro wrestling move. So Trent Seven is going to move on to the finals. He'll be taking on A-Kid, and the winner will be the Heritage Cup tournament winner and hold that championship. Or that cup, rather. So, trophy, whatever you want to call it. So I think that'll be really good. Trent Seven versus A-Kid. This is probably the right matchup given like the brackets and stuff and the way that these kind of matches go with the rounds and all that stuff. So yeah, I think this is it's a good move. I'm gonna say, man, I don't even know who to call for the winner. I'll make a prediction. And I'll it's close. It's really close. I'm gonna say Trent Seven gets the win. I think he gets, especially now that Pete Dunne is, you know, kind of veered away from NXT UK and he's becoming a big part of NXT and he's a part of the stable with McAfee and Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch and all that. I think it's gonna leave Trent Seven something to do, and I think that's probably the right move. And Tyler Bate's always gonna be fine as long as they have stuff to do for him, because he is Tyler, and I single those three guys out because, you know, Mustache Mountain and why can I not think of their collective name? Well, I guess it was Mustache Mountain, right? Was their collective name? Why am I feel like I'm blanking on like their like a different group name. Well, anyway, the three of those guys, they're always going to be linked together. Tyler Bate, Trent Seven, and Pete Dunne. And like I said, Tyler Bate's going to be a made man forever because he's so freaking talented and he still has a lot. He's all youth on his side. He's still very young. Like, Trent Seven, he's the oldest of the three with the least kind of going for him at the moment. And yeah, this gives him something to do. And I think that he should win this thing. So that's going to be my prediction. And those were the results for NXT. Moving on, we have ROH results. It was just two matches this week. Not a whole lot to talk about match-wise, but there is something a little more important that I will bring up from this show. So we had just two matches, like I said. Dak Draper defeated Brian Johnson and Brody King defeated Dalton Castle. I like the results of both these matches. I'm a much bigger fan of Brody King than I am Dalton Castle. I know there's a lot of people that are big fans of Dalton, and I'm not like a Dalton Castle hater. I just don't see him in that same kind of light that a lot of others do. He just doesn't really do it for me in a lot of ways. And Brody King, I think, could be a big star pretty much anywhere, depending on, you know, the story. And what I think is more important from all this is it looks like we have a new stable in Ring of Honor. Because so Jonathan Gresham wound up winning the entire tournament, as I thought he should, to become the new Pure Champion. And now it looks like he's going to have a little stable because, you know, he's the Pure Champion. He's also still one half of the tag team champions with Jay Lethal. So they're still together. And then the man that he beat in the finals, Hot Sauce Tracy Williams, he's in the stable. Then there's a guy with an octopus mask holding like this flag in the promo, and I don't know if they called the group the Foundation or I can't remember what they called themselves, but it looks like it's going to be a Jonathan Gresham led stable. And what I think is so interesting about this too, and I'll get in a little speculation here, over the collective weekend, I specifically remember Jonathan Gresham defeating Lee Moriarty, who I'm going to call is underneath the octopus mask. I could be totally wrong about that, but Lee Moriarty is a complete shoo-in for being in this group and a part of Ring of Honor and in the Pure title mix. Like, I think it'd be a complete travesty if we didn't see Lee Moriarty sooner than later in Ring of Honor as a part of all this. But I remember specifically over the collective weekend, Lee Moriarty was defeated by Jonathan Gresham, and Gresham got on the microphone And he said something to the effect of, there's a war coming, and you're like I am, and we're going to have each other's backs. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing now. We're about to be seeing Jonathan Gresham and his stable of pure wrestlers, and I think they're going to be defending like the honor of pure wrestling. And I think Lee Moriarty would just be perfect in that mix. Another guy that would be perfect is Daniel Macabre. Don't know what his status is with Ring of Honor or any other companies or anything like that, but I will say that Daniel Macabre is another guy I would for sure put in this mix, whether it's as an enemy or as a part of the group. I mean, it made more sense as part of the group because these are the kind of this is like the style that he upholds as well. So yeah, so as far as ROH, the two matches, whatever, no big deal, right? But as far as like that story, I am intrigued with where it's all gonna head with Jonathan Gresham, Tracy Williams, Jay Lethal, and then potentially others, basically fighting that war and trying to preserve professional, like pure professional wrestling. I'm very, very intrigued to see where this all heads. Next up, got some results for you for UWN Primetime Live. Show started off with a semifinal tournament match for the UWN title. So we had Chris Dickinson defeating Fred Rosser, or Roser, the former Darren Young from the WWE. And I mentioned Dickinson before. I said this as well last week. I think that Dickinson should, like, if he's not gonna wind up in like Impact, well, I guess Impact could have a relationship with this. And also UWN clearly has a relationship with the National Wrestling Alliance. So hopefully Dickinson wins this whole thing and it leads to like even bigger and better things for him. But yeah, Dickinson defeating Fred Roser, that was the right move, 100%. I love Dickinson getting this win. I've already given you my thoughts on him this week. We had Real Money Brothers and Cam defeating 4 Minutes of Heat and Will Alday. We had an FSW Women's Championship match where Lacey Ryan defeated Vipress. We had the NWA Tag Team Championships on the line. Aaron Stevens and JR Kratos defeated James Storm and Eli Drake to become the new champions. I hate that. Absolutely hate it. I'm just going to be totally honest. I love James Storm. I'm kind of indifferent to Eli Drake, to be honest, but I understand why he has the fan base he has. I'm not going to, I mean, JR Kratos, like, I don't hate, but Aaron Stevens, just to me, is just, I'm just not a fan. Like, he seems like a great dude, but I'm just not a fan. The only thing he's ever done that I've been even somewhat interested in was the stunt double thing that he was doing for The Miz. Like that was it. Like everything else has just been a giant miss for me. All the other characters and all the different character changes and his actual in-ring and so I'm just not a fan. And to see them get those belts off of James Storm and Eli Drake, I'm just not a fan of just being 100% honest. And once again, this is nothing against Aaron Stevens as a human being. Like he seems like a great guy. People seem to really like him. But I just have to be a, as a wrestling fan, I have to give him my opinion. And I just think this was the wrong booking move, just to be honest. And Aaron Stevens just seems to get all these chances when I feel like there's just better talent that could be getting the chances at this point. But that's just my personal opinion. Those of you listening do not have to share that opinion. If you're the biggest Aaron Stevens fan in the world, this is a big win for him. And in the main event, in the other semifinal match to determine the UWN World Champion, we had Mike Bennett defeating Sean Daivari. And this was, as well, this was the right move. I think that Chris Dickinson versus Mike Bennett in the finals makes total sense. I could see either guy winning, and either guy winning would be a huge benefit to both, or to either, I should say. I would say put the belt on Dickinson unless he has commitments coming up where he cannot be the champion. Mike Bennett, I'd say the same thing, I guess, except if it's up to me, I'm putting Dickinson over Bennett. If it's just me personally, I'm just a bigger fan of Dickinson, just straight up. But Bennett, this has been a really good way of him staying involved in wrestling while also not being a part of any major promotion. And he has a lot of work to do to restore kind of the name and reputation he had before going to the WWE. Now, the WWE stuff, that wasn't his fault, but like that's the perception, and I've talked about that on the show a lot. When you're in a storyline where like the biggest thing you do in the biggest company in the world is get cucked by your wife, I mean, it's an uphill battle, right? Like, and once again, this stuff isn't his fault, but that's where it's at. And he had a lot of buzz and had been having great matches in the indies before signing with the WWE and with Impact Wrestling before signing with the WWE. And I feel like he's trying to get back to that spot that he was at before. And this is all the right direction for him, though. And Mike Bennett, he has the talent. So I think it was the right move to have him defeat Daivari. And I think that Dickinson versus Bennett it's the right move for the new champion. And like I said, I'm going to take Dickinson, but I won't be disappointed either way. Like, I think that either guy is a good choice to be the first ever UWN champion. All right, let's wrap up this episode of The Weekender with a recap of the latest Being the Elite episode. This one was titled Full Gear Fallout. Show started off with basically showing, you know, Matt and Nick Jackson, and Nick is pissed off that Matt said that their career, or not their careers, but they won't be able to challenge for the tag team titles anymore if they lose the match against FTR at Full Gear. And then Matt shows Nick, he's like, I got a backup plan. Like, if we lose this match, we can always go for these. And he shows him a picture of the TNT tag team titles, which is hilarious because the joke, of course, being Cody with the same stipulation can't challenge for the world title anymore. Then they created the AEW TNT title, which Cody immediately won and held two times. And so that was pretty funny there. Matt and Nick are then shown at Walmart, still in Sandy figures. I'll talk more about the action figures probably next week, because I've already been going over an hour on this show today. But very interesting with Series 2 of AEW now coming out, their Jazzwear figures, because they are going for a lot of money right now on eBay. And I already have bought mine, and it's got me thinking, like, should I hold on to these? Because I'm a collector, more, you know, first and foremost, but it's like, full disclosure, I know somebody who just profited about $1,000 on their set, like, straight up. Bought it for like $150, sold it for like $1,000. So yeah, these figures are in super high demand. I've already let all my Series 1 breathe, and I've also got the little bit of the bubbly and the Kenny Omega ringside exclusive that came with the ring. So I've got all of them aside from like the 1 of 1,000 Cody. Sorry, the 1 of 500 Cody or the 1 of 1,000 Jericho. I have all of them up to this point. But yeah, that's all to say that Matt and Nick still can't find any in Walmart. After that, we see Silver and Reynolds trying to recruit Michael Nakazawa to the Dark Order, and they basically just hit on him and stuff like they always do when they're trying to recruit people. We got some video game hype, which y'all can check out all over the internet right now. I'm very happy that this is the funniest thing to me, right? Everyone's been complaining for years about the WWE video games getting worse and worse and worse every year. And the guy who was in charge of producing WWF No Mercy, which is still to this day, in my opinion, the best wrestling video game that's ever come out, that guy's just been available, apparently, because AEW went and got him for their video game. And I'm like, wait a second. WWE's just been putting out this shit year after year, and, like, this guy's been available? Like, you could have just had this guy fix it? And it's just, like, it's just insane to me. I love AEW for a lot of reasons, and one of the reasons is their fans that are listening to the fans. They're fans themselves, and they're listening to the wrestling fans and trying to give us what we want, which I just really, really appreciate. As somebody who has skipped the last 2 years of WWE video games because they just keep getting worse, I will be pre-ordering and playing the AEW game day one. Even if it winds up sucking, which I highly doubt that'll be the case, even if it winds up sucking, I'll be happy that I gave it a try because at least they attempted to give me something different that I was looking for. After that, we see Christopher Daniels talking to Brandon Cutler. He needs to take photos of all of them with belts, you know, to use in, like, upcoming promos and the video games and all that kind of stuff. Brandon Cutler is looking through the AEW titles, and they're like, no, like, put an actual belt on. We can see your underwear. And he puts on, like, this studded belt and poses with it anyways. After that, we see Brandon Cutler talking to Frank Kazarian, asking where the pay window is, because now that he has his first win after beating Peter Avalon, he doesn't know where to go pick up his winner's purse. And Frankie Kazarian just roasts him, talking about how there's no pay window. There hasn't been a pay window in, you know, 35 years. There's no real brass rings and all this stuff. And he does the whole do ya thing. And honestly, once again, this is just me personally, Frankie Kazarian just kind of really annoys me, to be honest. Like, I don't think what he says and what he does is funny. But I understand kind of the segment here. Cutler gets his first win. And yeah. Didn't know what to do because he hadn't won before. After that, we get the finals of the Gator Golf Championship for the first ever BTE title, and it winds up being Trent defeating Matt Jackson and John Silver. And it's hilarious because Trent even said right before the match he didn't even want to win the title, and then he wound up winning, which is pretty funny. Get a bunch of clips and stuff from Full Gear. What was the next big thing that happened? We had Miro and Kip Sabian playing video games. Penelope Ford was there too. Leva Bates comes in, and then just winds up like destroying Kip Sabian in a game. Jurassic Express is in an ice bath. All three of them together. They wind up getting out of the ice bath. Anna Jay winds up seeing them. They're all naked. And basically, the kind of joke that I'm getting out of it is that Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy both, they both shrunk up because they were in the ice bath. And then Marco Stunt was either incredibly small or still huge. I'm assuming the running kind of gag here, because they've referenced this so many different times over the weeks on Being the Elite, is that Marco, obviously he's very short, but apparently he just hung. I think that's what they're going for with all this. So we'll see how that all winds up, see where that all goes. We have footage. This was great. So we have footage of Matt and Nick Jackson celebrating with Kenny Omega and SoCal Uncensored. They're celebrating like they just won the NBA championship, just the non-alcoholic champagne all over the place. The walls are, there's plastic all over the walls and stuff tarped off, and they're just celebrating. And as they're celebrating, they're all singing like, "We are the champions, no time for losers," and anything like that. I think that's where they were at with it. Hangman Page is on the outside, like it looks like he wants to come in and celebrate with them, but he hears them talking about how like there's no time for losers where they are, and Hangman just walks away by himself. All he has is his drink still, and he does not want to associate with the rest of them. After that, we get an incredible promo by Eddie Kingston just talking about how huge of a loss it was, and that he did say that he quit and that he let down his family and himself and all this stuff. But he makes it clear that he's going to be back in that mix and that he will be the world champion. He says he's still going to be the champion, and he really thought it was going to happen in Full Gear. He broke his actual phone out of just anger. So, as you can imagine, just another incredible Kingston promo, and he really makes you believe that, yeah, one day he is going to become the champion. Like, this can't all be for nothing. And the show ends where the Dark Order is all in their, hangout or lair or whatever. And the funniest part of this was Silver's down in the dumps because he lost to Orange Cassidy, and he says he could really use a hug. So Anna Jay, feeling bad for him, walks up to him, and Silver literally pie faces her away and then hugs Ten, and then they're like grabbing each other's asses. I mean, and for a while it was kind of subtle, but now it's like pretty clear that the Dark Order is like, they're all like gay for each other, which is like, it's just the dynamic's just very funny. I don't know how else to put it. It's just very funny. Oh, I'm not laughing. Like, obviously, I'm the kind of person, like, just full disclosure, like, I'm pro gay marriage. I have gay friends. I have trans friends, all that kind of stuff. And I, like, to me, it's all good. You know what I mean? I feel like you should be able to love whoever you want to. You get one life to live, and you should live it the happiest you possibly can. The reason I think this is funny, though, is because it's clearly meant to be funny. So I'm not laughing, just so you know. I'm not laughing at the fact that they're like being kind of quote unquote gay for each other. It's the fact that they're doing it in such a hilarious way is what makes it funny to me. it is funny. And the show ends with an interesting twist, because to make John Silver feel better, basically, the Dark Order is like, "Remember when we did that fuck Hangman chant, and you just, it makes you feel better?" And they're just all together, "Fuck Hangman, fuck Hangman, fuck Hangman." Hangman Page walks like right into the room as they're chanting it, and just goes and grabs a drink from their bar, and then he joins in on the fuck Hangman chant. Like, he's like, "Fuck Hangman," they're all doing it together, and he leaves the room, and then Evil Uno chases him to the outside and says he'll be right back. So it looks like they're gonna try to court Hangman Page again, try to get him into the Dark Order. And we'll see where all this goes. But that was a very interesting twist there at the end. So that's going to do it for this episode of the Fightful Select Weekender podcast. I've been Steven Jensen. Make sure to give me a follow over at Twitter at @FightTalk_FIGHTTALK_. Until next weekend, enjoy some professional wrestling.